Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. China's human rights problems spotlighted at the UN. Mexico's president is being tested on judicial independence. And the humanitarian situation in Gaza is beyond crisis. First, China's human rights problems spotlighted at the UN. Australia's ambassador to the UN delivered a scathing indictment of China's policies in Xinjiang and Tibet on October 22nd. Speaking on behalf of 14 other member states, James Larson reminded the UN body that the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights and other UN investigating bodies had found China guilty of abuses that, quote, may constitute international crimes, in particular crimes against humanity. Larson said, quote, relying extensively on China's own records, these comprehensive findings and recommendations by independent human rights experts from all geographic regions detail evidence of large-scale arbitrary detention, family separation, enforced disappearances and forced labor, systematic surveillance on the basis of religion and ethnicity, severe and undue restrictions on cultural, religious, and linguistic identity and expression, torture, and sexual and gender-based violence, including forced abortion and sterilization, and the destruction of religious and cultural sites, unquote. Regarding Tibet, Larson said, quote, UN human rights treaty bodies and United Nations special procedures have detailed the detention of Tibetans for the peaceful expression of political views, restrictions on travel, coercive labor arrangements, separation of children from families in boarding schools, and erosion of linguistic, cultural, educational, and religious rights and freedoms in Tibet, unquote. Larson urged China to uphold its obligations and, quote, includes releasing all individuals arbitrarily detained in both Xinjiang and Tibet and urgently clarifying the fate and whereabouts of missing family members, unquote. Needless to say, the Chinese representative to the UN scoffed at all these charges. Mexico's president is being tested on judicial independence. Mexico's Claudia Sheinbaum faces, quote, a crisis that tests the authority of the executive, said Ana Laura Megaloni, a legal expert based in Mexico City. If she doesn't handle it well, she might lose control of the country's direction. The crisis concerns an overhaul of the court system engineered by Sheinbaum's predecessor and mentor, President Andrés Manuel López Obrador, and the ruling Morena Party. It requires that nearly all the nation's judges be elected and be subject to review by a disciplinary board made up of elected officials. Sheinbaum says the new law will reduce corruption. Critics say this law is unconstitutional and politicizes the judicial system. They worry that criminal forces in the country will be able to capture control of the courts. Mexico's Congress added to their concerns by passing another law that prevents most legal challenges to constitutional amendments. That law, critics say, would end judicial review. Ernesto Zedillo Ponce de Leon, who was president of Mexico from 1994 to 2000, writes in the Washington Post, quote, as a result of these changes, all judges, magistrates, and Supreme Court justices will purportedly be replaced by individuals who lack significant professional qualifications and owe their positions to the ruling party, or even worse, to other patrons and potentially criminal organizations. By design, the new judges will be neither competent nor independent, unquote. Protests from legal workers are among the most significant. 8 of 11 Supreme Court justices have said they would resign if the new law is approved. Next, the humanitarian situation in Gaza is beyond crisis. On-the-scene reporting from Gaza describes not just horrendous civilian losses and destruction of over a quarter of all buildings, it also brings to light two other trends that I've noted before. Attacks on residents in supposedly safe areas they have been directed to by the IDF, and the long-term aim of the attacks to make room for Israeli settlers. Those two trends are an expansion of the so-called General's Plan to empty northern Gaza of Palestinian residents. As reported in the Israeli magazine Plus 972, the military's plan is a, quote, even more sinister and brutal version of the general's plan within a more concentrated area. One could even say that the plan itself and the intense international media and diplomatic storm it has created has helped keep everyone in the dark as to what is actually going on, and obscure the two ways in which the plan has already been redefined. The first, most immediate distinction, is the abandoning of provisions for reducing harm to civilians, i.e. giving residents of northern Gaza a week to evacuate southward. The second departure concerns the real purpose of emptying the area. While portraying the military operation as a security necessity, it was, in fact, an embodiment of the spirit of ethnic cleansing and resettlement from day one. The writer concludes with a frightening possibility, quote, "The catastrophe in northern Gaza is growing by the minute, and the confluence of circumstances means that the unimaginable extermination of thousands of people inside the besieged area is no longer beyond the realm of possibility," unquote. UNICEF's executive director, Catherine Russell, in a report November 2, cites, quote, "the indiscriminate strikes on civilians in the Gaza Strip, as well as attacks on her own staff." Her report says in part, quote, "civilians and civilian structures, including residential buildings, as well as humanitarian workers and their vehicles, must always be protected in accordance with international humanitarian law. Displacement or evacuation orders do not permit any party to the conflict to regard all individuals or objects in an area as military targets, nor do they exempt them from their obligations to distinguish between military and civilian objectives, be proportional, and take all feasible precautions in attacks. Yet these principles are being flouted over and over again, leaving tens of thousands of children killed, injured, and deprived of essential services needed for survival." In other news, the Biden administration has failed to investigate illegal use of U.S. arms in Gaza. The Washington Post reports, quote, "The Biden administration has received nearly 500 reports alleging that Israel used U.S.-supplied weapons for attacks that caused unnecessary harm to civilians in the Gaza Strip, but it has failed to comply with its own policies and laws requiring swift investigations of such claims, according to people familiar with the matter," unquote. These reports, which come from NGOs, media, and on-the-ground observations, are supposed to be investigated and, where proven accurate, acted upon within 2 months, in accordance with the State Department's own Civilian Harm Incident Response Guidance. "No single case has reached the action stage," current and former officials told the Washington Post. The reason may be not only that the administration does not want to confront Israel and raise objections from progressives in Congress. Israel is typically consulted on these reports and probably slow walks them in hopes they disappear. Next, two polls show why U.S.-China tensions will persist. Tensions in U.S.-China relations are revealed in two recent polls, one in China and the other in the U.S. Tsinghua University asked Chinese about U.S. strategic policies toward China. 88% said U.S. policy is to contain China's development. 48% said U.S. policy is trying to conduct peaceful evolution in China, meaning regime change. 40% said the U.S. wants to avoid war or military competition with China, and only 6% said the U.S. hopes to cooperate with China to advance shared prosperity. The U.S. poll, conducted by the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, found the lowest level of positive feelings toward China, only 26 out of 100 people, since the poll was first completed in 1978. Two other findings. A majority of Americans, 55%, say the U.S. should actively work to limit the growth of China's power, while 4 in 10 say the U.S. should undertake friendly cooperation and engagement with China. And a majority of Americans, 56%, say U.S.-China trade does more to weaken U.S. national security than to strengthen it. Illegal Chinese immigration poses problems. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security has arranged for a second flight home for Chinese citizens who have illegally crossed into the U.S. from Mexico. But these repatriation flights are a drop in the bucket compared with the number of illegal Chinese immigrants whom Beijing is refusing to accept. DHS estimated that number at least 40,000 PRC nationals in 2021, but the number has soared since then. U.S. authorities picked up more than 37,000 Chinese citizens who had crossed from Mexico in 2023. Why is it so difficult to send these people back? First is the cost. Second is Chinese opposition. Turns out the Chinese don't want criminals back, they only wanted political dissidents, said Paul Rosenzweig, former DHS Deputy Assistant Secretary for Policy under President George W. Bush. A terrible fate probably awaits people in that category. A former Trump advisor tells us why Trump and Musk admire Putin. Fiona Hill, who advised Trump on Russia and broke with him over Ukraine, says that the common denominator of Trump, Musk, and Putin is oligarchy. They aren't driven by the people they represent or the companies that they represent, she says, but by the peer group that they are in, which is an extraordinarily small group of people. Their interactions are all about them figuring out how to exercise power together. Unquote. When it comes to Musk, he's promoting Trump's candidacy and transacting with Putin because it serves his own interests in amassing political and financial power. Hill said, quote, his loyalty is not necessarily to the United States. Interviewed by Politico, the online news magazine, Hill said of Putin's interest, quote, what he wants is the weakening of the U.S. He wants the United States out of international affairs, and one could assume that if he is having conversations with President Trump, what Putin is trying to do is push his preferences, his interest in exerting Russian power, and engaging in his own power plays. Putin wants to see the U.S. weak. In a private conversation, he will be pushing out messages that reinforce his preferences, advising, perhaps cajoling Trump to do or say certain things. Unfortunately, this messaging might be working. A lot of the statements that President Trump and people around him, like Vice Presidential candidate J.D. Vance, have made about the war in Ukraine sound exactly like the statements that Putin has made about his preferences for how the war in Ukraine ends, unquote. As for Musk, he obviously needs Putin's and Xi Jinping's cooperation to operate his satellites and SpaceX system, says Hill. Moreover, quote, Musk's takeover of X has weaponized disinformation from Russia, from China, Iran, North Korea, and other countries that have the U.S. as an adversary. And we have to ask, why is Musk not stopping that? Musk's ambitions are mind-boggling, she says. He seeks to not just get contracts from the state, but to try to capture the state, which is, frankly, what he's doing in supporting Trump's election. Musk is hoping to actually own the state. He sees Trump, obviously, as a pathway to power. Finally, two updates. The first from Europe. China's market share of electric vehicles in the European Union has jumped to more than 20% from around 3% just 3 years ago. In response, the EU has imposed new tariffs, which come on top of existing import duties of 10%. Those tariffs vary based on the amount of subsidies each automaker in China received, starting at 7.8% for Tesla and go up to 35.3% for SAIC, Motor of Shanghai. These tariffs are to remain in place for 5 years. The automotive sector is crucial in Europe, employing 13.8 million people and accounting for 7% of the overall EU economic output. One European auto industrial group argues that a failure to impose tariffs would have resulted in significant job losses in Europe. And finally, in Japan, the new Prime Minister, Ishiba Shigeru, has only been in office a few months, and his Liberal Democratic Party, the LDP, is already in trouble. On October 27, Japan held a snap election where the LDP lost a majority in the lower house of parliament. The LDP has held a majority in the lower house since 2009, and over the last nearly 70 years has dominated Japanese politics. Based upon these results, the LDP and its junior coalition partner Komeito, which also lost seats, will now hold 215 seats out of 465 in the House of Representatives, 18 seats short of a majority. It remains unclear whether the LDP can find a third coalition partner to secure a majority in the lower house. And that's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening and take good care.